Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, March 1st. I'm Ray Graff. The annual festival of Mardi Gras continues into next week, ending on Fat Tuesday, March 5th. Since many of us won't be able to make the trip down to New Orleans, our guest today is bringing the party to us. Food Friday favorite chef Rick Orlando is here and in the studio with his top Mardi Gras dishes. So get your beads ready. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, 800-348-2551. Baked oysters, gumbo, Chef Rick Orlando, your calls. It's all straight ahead on Food Friday right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Mardi Gras runs into next week, Fat Tuesday, March 5th coming up. And while New Orleans is the pinnacle of the celebration, we want to help people in our region get a taste of the annual tradition. And to lead our foray into the culinary side of the party is Chef Rick Orlando. Rick Orlando is the chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. You may have seen him taste victory on the Food Network's Chopped program, his PBS show Rick Orlando's TV Kitchen, or maybe you heard his podcast 1 Million String Beans. Our number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org, but jot the number down, 800, right on your wall, 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Ray. What's going on?
I don't know. You know, before we get going with the topic at hand, You're a busy man. What's going on?
I'm busy. I don't know. I'm having the, you know, midlife crisis, so I'm having fun.
Oh, you got a red sports car now?
You know, no.
Convertible? Good for you.
You know, we closed New World Home Cooking in April of 18. New World Bistro Bar is going strong, and I'm still a big part of that. I'm there 3 to 4 days a week. But I decided to test the waters on other things.
Yeah.
And one of them is I went into that folder on my laptop that said projects to finish.
Yes.
And it opened up 20 years of projects. But among those projects, we're doing writing and media. So I've been doing a lot of podcasting. I have two podcasts.
Okay, the podcast is really taking off.
It's going very well.
I didn't know you had two, though. I know about 1 Million String Beans.
1 Million String Beans is the industry podcast. As a matter of fact, I have one coming out next week where I interview Debbie Klauber of Debbie's Kitchen. You know, I chat, I talk, tell stories, put a little music on there. But then my literary agent wanted me to try to get a memoir going. So I started writing the memoir.
Yeah.
She wants me to release sections of it as a podcast and a blog. So it's called Clam Bellies and a Pizza.
Why?
It's basically my childhood story growing up in New Haven and then moving to Boston and New York and what I ate and the foods that influenced me. But it really, you know what's funny? I'm going to be 60 this year.
Yeah.
I grew up an Italian-American in a very Italian-American community, moved out to Cambridge, moved to Harvard area, and kind of shunned my Italianism. And now that I'm older, I'm realizing that.
Why did you do that?
Well, it just seemed like it wasn't the place for an artsy guy to be in the 80s, you know? It was really associated with The Godfather and Guido's, and it was just a negative connotation at that point.
Yeah, okay.
And I was trying to be Mr. Artsy Guy, you know, Mr. Cool World Beat Mother, you know. And
All right, easy now.
No, be careful.
And
I said father. But I ended up embracing it in the podcast, telling stories of my grandparents, telling stories of the clams and the pizza and the food I grew up with and the guys with, you know, T-shirts and hairy backs playing pinochle and you know, drinking Sambuca. And people are really loving it. We're getting a lot of attention. We actually were on Bob and Somebody's show, I forget, but a nationally syndicated podcast talked about my podcast because they heard it. So it's going very well, and it's exciting. And it's like therapy.
Well, but is there ever the temptation to embellish a bit, make up some stuff?
Well, as I explained to my wife, who's a lawyer, I said, this is a story.
Right.
This is
okay.
Not a document.
Okay.
So you can embellish a little.
Yeah.
I think that makes things interesting, but not out and out make up stuff.
So it's based on reality.
It's pretty,
as you perceive it to be.
Well, you know, as I said before, it's kind of like therapy. When you begin the process of doing a memoir work, you don't remember anything. And you make little notes as you get as you remember stuff. And then as you start writing, the floodgates open. And you remember the weirdest things. You remember the copper Rambler that had one missing hubcap that my grandfather drove. You know, you remember all these odd details, and you begin to visualize them. And you don't remember, you don't know for sure whether they're true. You just know that they're beautiful and they're in your head and they're coming out. So go for
it.
Well,
that's great. I remember very little from my youth.
You start doing a memoir, they'll come right out.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe when I hit 60.
I'm writing stories about, what my grandmother cooked when she slipped the Nestle's Crunch bars in my coat pocket on the way out the door. I mean, stuff. Who remembers that stuff? Who is going to remember that?
So the name of that podcast?
Clam Bellies and a Pizza. It's pizza with an A in front, which is the New Haven pronunciation. You don't say you're going out for pizza. You say, I'm going for Abitz. Abitz.
All right, very good. And the other one, the industry one, is 1 Million String Beans.
1 Million String Beans. And that one is actually going well. We just picked up a distribution deal with a radio station out of the Hudson Valley is distributing it for us. It's going great.
Could you make money on a podcast?
Eventually.
Yeah?
Eventually.
But you're not in it for the money.
I'm not in anything for the money, right?
Did you?
Sheer pleasure.
Did you have any regrets when you closed the shop downstate?
Not really. 25 years is about as long as you could run a restaurant and continue to be exciting and reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
It's an interesting market. That market is exploding. There are so many restaurants, and it just was time. My wife really wanted to practice law, and I really wanted to get into my writing, and I wanted to focus on Albany and developing new things, and you can't, So it's a country restaurant. It's all hands on deck there.
That's good, man. Well, you're in a good place then.
Yeah, and I'm doing a little music.
That's nice.
And, hanging around with you.
Yeah, well, that's your own problem. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest today on Food Friday. It's 800-348-2551. If you're calling in, hang in there a couple minutes. We'll get to the phone calls shortly. 800-348-2551. Of course, Mardi Gras coming up. Yep. Never have been down there for anything.
Next year, I started doing food tours. That's the other thing I started
doing. Oh, yeah? Boy, you don't stop.
No, I'm doing Sicily in May, and there are two seats left. Go to rickorlando.com, get the details. Okay. However, we did a New Orleans food tour last November.
Yeah.
We're going to go back for French Quarter Week, which is in, I think, March, about a year from now.
No, that's great.
And that's when all the local bands are featured. They set up all the tents on the Mississippi, and it's all local bands. New Orleans is like Boston is my second city because I live there. I grew up in... But New Orleans is my home. I mean, I go there all the time, and I just love it.
Now, I think we've done a Mardi Gras show in the past.
I think I've done them almost every year.
There's my memory. It won't go in the memoir. And my kids, still to this day, they all are very impressed that one time Rick Orlando made something with gator, and I ate it. And it was, as I recall, it was pretty darn good.
Well, today you have three. Actually, you have five dishes, but you have three. I brought our what we call swamp gumbo.
Oh, nice.
Which has got gator, crab, duck, crawfish, shrimp.
Nice.
All in there.
Beautiful.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I brought a simpler chicken, sausage, and shrimp jambalaya.
Beautiful.
And I bought three types of baked stuffed oysters.
Huh.
What made oysters. They're technically oysters Rockefeller, but we call them oysters Rickefeller because I added my own twist to them.
Clever.
I know,
that's a witty marketing guy, great.
Huh?
Yeah. All right, tell us about Rickefeller.
Well, the oysters Rockefeller, it's funny. There's a saying that there are six dishes in New Orleans, but actually there are 6 million dishes in New Orleans. But there are traditional dishes. Like if you went to Rome, you'd want to have cacio e pepe. If you went to Provence, you'd want to have cassoulet. So New Orleans has its set dishes: gumbo, jambalaya, etouffee, oysters Rockefeller, barbecued shrimp, and everybody makes them. And it's hard to veer from the authentic ones, but if you do, and you're an iconoclast chef, you got to be really good, right?
Yeah.
So what we do in our kitchen is we kind of do some things as hardcore authentically as we can. And then authentic is a weird word because there are hundreds of gumbos, right? Gumbo, there's no one gumbo.
Right. Like there's no one chili.
Right, exactly. However, if you go to the famous places, the Commander's Palace, the Arnaud's, you're going to get a particular style of gumbo that is the ubiquitous gumbo that people aren't from New Orleans eat all the time. So
okay.
That's what we made.
All right.
But the oysters, the Rickefellers or Rockefellers, traditionally a spinach and herb based with some Pernod, some anise flavor.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So mine has, that one has a little bit of melted cheese and some hollandaise and really dense.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Because, I'm not a huge oyster fan. So this, I've never had oysters Rockefeller before.
Well, there's one. That's the green one.
Yeah.
The beige one is called oysters Bienville.
Okay.
Monsieur Bienville was one of the people who actually conceived of building the French Quarter in the early 1700s on the Mississippi River. And this Bienville Street, it's part of the French Quarter.
Yeah.
That one is made with like a bechamel sauce with sherry, mushrooms, shrimp, Parmesan cheese.
Nice.
Right? And then the pinkish ones is less well-known, but really an old-school dish called oysters rousseau.
Yeah.
And that's like a Creole tomato cream sauce with bacon and cheese baked on top of your oysters.
All right.
Yeah, the decadence is there.
That sounds pretty good. I got to be honest
with you. Yeah, they're hearty. They're hearty, but they're yummy.
Let's take a break, Rick Orlando, and we'll try some of these oysters Rickefeller and whatnot. The number here, if you want to talk to Chef Rick Orlando about Mardi Gras or whatever, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday. Rick Orlando is here today. We talk Mardi Gras. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Okay, man. I'm a convert. That was good. Now, the one I had was the oysters rousseau.
Rousseau, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's phenomenal with the bacon.
And that is one of the ones that is not as well known. It's not as ubiquitous in all the restaurants.
Yeah.
You know? Like we said, there's six dishes in
New Orleans.
How'd
you find the recipe?
I have a collection of crazy old cookbooks, and some of them are the wire bound, you know. Damn That Good, you know, from New Orleans, 1952.
Right. Al Hurt is on the cover. Okay.
And I found the recipe, and one of my dear friends is a woman named Poppy Tooker, T-O-O-K-E-R.
Real name?
Yeah.
She started the
New Orleans Farmers Markets, and she's a food historian. And she writes food books based on the old restaurants. Like, she wrote the Two Jacks cookbook, which is 150 years old.
Right.
Makes Jack's Oyster House look new.
No, she didn't write it 150 years ago.
No,
right?
She wrote it just this last year.
Okay, gotcha. Understand.
We did a tour and she took us in the attic and showed us this one painting that she says is a transvestite. Well, some days it's a woman and some days it's a man, you know.
Right.
All the haunted
like
stuff.
Like Hazel Eyes, right.
Yeah, all that great stuff.
I'm with you.
But we were talking about him. She said, you know, rousseau is one of the old dishes from the turn of the century that was very popular, where they just put Creole sauce and bacon and cheese and
so
baked
good.
Oysters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good. And it's a good way to get oysters that you don't have to buy like really expensive West Coast oysters for this. You want a nice, big, hearty oyster.
Yeah.
Down in the South, in New Orleans, the oysters are prevalent in the fall, and they're big and they're fat. So, of course, you eat them raw, but they're designed for cooking. And
yeah.
So these are Connecticut Blue Points. So they're a pretty good-sized oyster.
They're so
tender. Like a little,
they're not rubbery and horribly done.
No, because we shuck them fresh and bake them, but They're not necessarily a delicate oyster. They're kind of a hearty, meaty oyster, and they can hold the toppings pretty well.
All right. Well, I think we better take a call so I can try the next one. 800-348-2551 is the number. We go to Linda in Arlington, Vermont. Linda.
Hello. I'm so happy to hear this. I'm traveling, but my husband and I, he recently passed, are from the New Haven area.
Okay.
His grandmother was Sicilian. Italian, and his grandfather was from Naples.
It sounds like New Haven.
It is New Haven. And so he grew up on those Sunday dinners that lasted all day with pinochle and cigars and introduced me, who was a WASP, to that environment, which was so eye-opening and wonderful and delicious that I'm so happy to hear of another New Havener that has gone around the world and is talking about it.
Oh, good.
But
well,
my question for you is, how did you go from New Haven, Boston to Creole? I missed that segment, I think, if you discussed it.
Well,
and
it
I'd
happened
like
in the 70s and 80s,
there.
So I kind of missed it, too. No, no, honestly, what happened was I grew up in New Haven, and I started playing music, and then I ended up kind of in the underground music and art world. And in that, I began to travel with musicians and hang around with artists. And I got introduced to what we'd like to call cheap eats. We ate a lot of food in the Village and a lot of food in Boston. And I just kind of fell in love with all things Creole, funky, South Asian, Indian, you know, just the stuff that wasn't French white tablecloth dining. And so the more I fell in love with it, and the more I traveled, and the more I read, and the more people I met, and the more musicians I met, the more it just became a big part of my creative life. And it's what I do, you know. I mean, I love to celebrate the underdogs, you know. And I think that in a lot of ways, not so much now because the food world has changed. Right. But, you know, 25 years ago when I first started cooking, these were underdog cuisines. These were things that people were just starting to be the tip of the iceberg. So I embraced it.
Right.
And I've made a career out of it. And if you want to go to rickorlando.com, you can read about my New Haven escapades, which is fun.
Yeah.
And I actually have pictures.
Who are some of the people that you played with? Who are some of the musicians?
Oh, I've played with everybody. I mean,
really?
I opened up on stage, opened for, played with them.
Yeah.
Everyone from the Violent Femmes to Melly Mel to the Neville Brothers
to
the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
What about Sinatra?
Never Sinatra.
No?
Never
okay.
got
well,
Sinatra.
Not everybody,
nah, I didn't get that far.
Rick Orlando is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. We talk Mardi Gras on this Food Friday. Rick Orlando, you've been on the show a lot.
Yeah.
And you brought a lot of food. I think the oysters are the best thing I've ever had that you brought. I mean,
really?
I had one of each while we were on the
phone. Oh, you did?
God almighty.
Good on the
Lord.
Menu all weekend
okay,
at New World Bistro Bar. You know that, right?
Now, the Rickefeller was the one that had the spinach,
yes.
right? Very
creamy,
nice.
Creamy, delicate.
This other one, that tell us
Bienville.
What's in, tell us what's in that, because that's out of control.
Okay, so that starts with your typical, what's called the Trinity. In Creole cooking, it's the onion, pepper, celery.
Right.
You know, everywhere you go in the world, it's like a base ingredient.
We yeah.
start. You go to India, it's onions, ginger, garlic, right? You go to Italian, they make the soffritte with onions, carrots, tomatoes. And French, onion, carrots, and garlic. French has the carrots and onions and leeks. In the Creole cooking, peppers, onions, and celery are the base. So that's peppers, onions, and celery
yeah.
cooked down with mushrooms, sherry, and shrimp, and then finished with bechamel sauce and... just some lots of grated cheese and popped in the oven.
Oh my God.
It's just a rich, creamy,
it
almost
is
like
so
an old,
rich and so creamy.
Right. Like an old lobster thermidor or something, oh. you know? And a lot of these dishes are old school, which is great because everything old is new again. I've got all these great young chefs working for me at New World Bistro Bar.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is awesome stuff because they're. You know, they're learning fermentation and a lot of modern hipster techniques.
Right.
And I say, I'm going to teach you some really old school stuff.
Yeah.
And they eat it and they're like, duh. And my point is, listen, I played rock and roll, right? You can't say John Lee Hooker isn't valid even though his music is simple. You're right? There's an evolution. So for me, learning this food is like learning the blues before you learn how to play jazz fusion, learning the basics, learning the fundamentals, where it came from, where the roots of the food are. This is the roots of flavor in America.
Oh, boy, it's so good. Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Steve in Del Mar, you're on.
Hey, big fan, Ray. And,
thanks.
Actually, I'm a fan of the chef.
Well, thank you.
I saw you on Chopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I unfortunately couldn't taste the food, but I saw you, and I said to myself, this guy's going to win. This guy's going to win.
Thanks.
It's all fixed, though, right?
Nah,
no, not really.
It's a no, dogfight.
But I wish I could have been there to taste it. Now, what can they mass produce those recipes? Or
what did you cook on the show?
Well, I mean, I was on three times, so I ended up cooking eight dishes because I got chopped in the last one after the two other wins. You know, it's ironic. My wife is a very thoughtful, focused thinker, where I'm a little more scattered and esoteric. And she did this. She called it, I'm going to give you the Don Corleone treatment.
Oh, nice.
She said, don't invent. Make what you know and make it well. So every basket that I opened, I looked at the ingredients and thought of what I could make that I knew was already good.
Right.
As opposed to saying, I see these chefs on these shows saying, I'm taking a chance. I've never made this before. And, of course, why would you do that when your life is on the line, really?
Right.
It's like there's a cliff to jump over, and you're like, I never jumped before, but I'm going to try it now. You're going to die. So I did make, in the first episode, Mark Murphy said it was the best dish he had on Chopped. I made my jerk chicken, but not really. They gave us quails, coconuts, raisinettes, and kale.
Raisinettes.
Raisinettes.
Okay.
And I looked at that and said, I could make jerk quail out of this.
With raisinettes. With the chocolate and the raisins.
Well, in the jerk, you want to add a little sweetness. We use molasses.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I can melt these down and mix them with my jerk seasoning.
Oh,
and we made rum raisin jerk quail. And you know, it was a smash hit. So I can't think of some of the other dishes. Well, I could. I know we had gooey duck clams, which was a trip. And I went to my Connecticut roots and made classic fried clam roll. I know I had white chocolate trout and chipotle peppers, which is interesting because I make a dish with white chocolate and chipotle. So I said, oh, I know that dish.
With trout.
Yes. I usually make it with scallops, but I made it with trout on the show because that's what I had.
That's so disturbing. So you have chocolate trout.
Well, white chocolate's not really chocolate.
Okay.
It's kind of subtle. It's sweet.
Okay.
Smoky chipotle peppers, some blue cheese. Dip your trout in it. It's pretty good. Like a fondue.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure, man. Go.
One follow-up.
Yeah.
Who is the toughest judge?
That's a really, I think Jeffrey Zakarian was the toughest judge. Mm. Alex Cornishelli, you know what's interesting about the way the Food Network works is they create portrayals of people that, characters, right?
Yeah.
So Alex, a lot of people were texting me at the time saying, oh, Alex is so mean to you. Alex was a doll. Alex actually, when I finally got chopped in the third episode, she came in the dressing room and cried because she wanted me to win the grand finale.
Yeah.
But they make her out to be tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's not tough.
It's all showbiz.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to hang up.
Okay.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is here, and we talked Mardi Gras today. This one came in via email, and this is from Chris. Chris says, I'm planning on making shrimp etouffee. I don't know if that etouffee.
Mm, etouffee.
Yeah, trying to avoid Lipitor as a side dish. Can I use ghee instead of butter, or will that ruin the dish?
Ghee is butter, so go for it.
Really?
Yeah, all ghee is clarified butter.
Clarified butter, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fine. And you know what? Butter is not, it's the least of your problems in the world, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it more and more evidence is that butter is not the problem, margarine is. So use ghee. The secret of making a good etouffee is don't let your roux get too dark, where in a gumbo, as you see here, you toast that roux until it's almost mahogany dark color.
Yeah.
We're in a etouffee. Etouffee is almost like a Creole variation on pot pie filling. It's a lighter colored, thickened gravy filled with shrimp or crawfish or chicken, whatever. So it's basically a stew. Etouffee means smothered, you know, kind of cooked down.
The color of the gumbo
is
just incredible.
And that's from cooking the roux for about 2.5 hours until the flour gets all toasty. And that's made with duck fat.
All right, I got to have some
which
of that.
Is good.
Let's go back to the phones. I got to serve myself here. 800-348-2551.
Can I get a waiter to table seven, please?
Yeah, we miss you. Jordan in New Paltz, you're on with Rick Orlando.
Hi, Jordan.
Hey, I work in a southern Louisiana restaurant actually located in New Paltz. And we've had a tough time with a beignet recipe that's consistent, that'll hold.
Mm-hmm.
I just started following Emeril's online, but before that, I was just honestly cutting up pizza dough and frying that. What do you think about beignets?
Beignets are they're fantastic, but
donuts essentially.
Yeah,
right?
But if you don't have the they're a yeast donut.
Yeah.
If you don't have the right setup, they're a little complicated because what will happen, as you probably found out, is they will continue to proof as they're sitting waiting to be fried. And by the middle of the night in the restaurant, they'll be, you know, 2 feet in the air. So you need to have, like, hold them under refrigeration before you fry them. Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, our beignet recipe is, it's a little lighter. It's more like a zeppoli, closer to a zeppoli dough than a pizza dough. It's not as it's not as developed. It's not as tough. Not as much gluten in it. You know, use cake flour when you make it.
Yeah.
I like to serve mine with chocolate sauce. And the other one we do is a raspberry jalapeno sauce.
Nice.
Simple syrup and put a couple of fresh jalapenos in the simple syrup to infuse the flavor, and then puree raspberries, frozen or fine, and run it through a strainer, and you get your tart, kind of tangy one sauce and your chocolate sauce with the other.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, Jordan, thanks for the call. Rick Orlando is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. You've had Jasper Alexander's chicken, right?
Yeah.
And he makes beignets really well.
He's the king, man.
Oh, God.
He's the king of the chicken.
Oh, God, so good.
I got to hang with Jasper. I haven't seen him in a while.
So good. All right, we go over to Kevin in Averill Park. Kevin, you're on.
Hey, Rick and Ray. How's it going?
Good.
Long time no hear from you here, Chef.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Not too bad.
How's life with you?
Yeah, I'm keeping busy. I spent the whole day standing a 40-foot bar.
Oh, the restaurant is going to open someday, Kevin, right?
You're talking to the legendary Kevin Ty.
Yeah, the someday day.
All right, man.
Well, anyway, I'm hearing you talking about music, and I'm hearing you talk about food. What recommendations do you have for New Orleans-style music for Mardi Gras?
Oh, that's a good one. So there's a couple of different types of music that you hear a lot associated with Mardi Gras. One is Zydeco music.
Sure.
Which is accordion bass and you know, some great artists. I mean, there's the legends like Clifton Chenier and Beausoleil and Buckwheat Zydeco. And they're great. And they're more country music in a way, you know? They're more what you're going to find when you go up the coast west towards Texas. In New Orleans, I think you want to go more for the classic New Orleans-style old jazz. You're going to hear Preservation Hall Jazz Band has some amazing albums. I like things like Professor Longhair.
He's from down there.
Really
I was just going to say
you know,
that.
A little bald head.
Give me Fats Domino any
Fats
day
Domino
of the week,
great.
Man.
Most of all, the music should have a sense of celebration and just that little sense of ire that comes from that music, that little bit of sadness mixed with celebration. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to be a little mellower, the Preservation Hall albums are amazing. If you've never been to Preservation Hall, anybody out there, one of the highest recommendations I can say is to go, wait in line, get your ticket, sit for 1 hour, watch these 70, 80-year-old guys play in a room the size of a kindergarten room. It's awesome. It's an awesome musical experience.
You know, Kevin, when you open this restaurant, if it ever happens, you and Rick will have to come on and you guys will shoot the breeze, all right?
Yeah.
Here we go, yeah.
And we can do that.
As long as you keep it clean.
Give him a hard time about his French white tablecloths issues.
All right, fair enough. Hey, man, thanks for the call.
You know,
Good talking to both of you. Thank
great,
you.
Great, Kevin. I love you, man. Speaking of music, you know, people go to New Orleans for holiday times like Mardi Gras festivals. They tend to stay in the French Quarter.
Yeah.
But there's an area called Frenchman Street, which has all the great old clubs. The Spotted Cat is there. What's the other guy's place? Juice, I forget the name. The Checkpoint Charlie's, which is,
famous
I love this,
place.
Music, bar, food, laundromat.
Yeah. Well,
and you can wash your clothes while you're watching a band, right?
Right.
But also, there's music on the streets.
Yeah.
And the music on the streets is incredible. We went for Halloween, and Frenchman Street has music on every street corner. And we're talking 15 or 20 young kids playing marching band funk, which is out of control. What they call it down there is the tradition. They try to teach the tradition. What I love is how many young kids, African-American and white kids, play horns still, which is a tradition, which you don't see around here. As a matter of fact, the school bands are struggling around to get kids to join. And down there, man, everybody's got a trombone, a tuba. Bass player is on tuba.
It's not so easy to carry the tuba around onto the street corner.
They're
funking
out with it, man, playing Parliament Funkadelic with the tuba.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is here. We're talking Mardi Gras on Food Friday, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment. The gumbo is off the charts. Explain.
All right. So this gumbo has, we call it everything gumbo. We used to call it rich man's gumbo. But it starts again with the Trinity cooked down. And we use a little andouille sausage in there, which is going to give you that smoky, a little bit of spicy flavor. Cook it down for quite a long time. We use, this has some shellfish stock, some chicken stock. Some tomato, like thin tomato puree, okra, and then in there is alligator.
Oh, yeah.
Crab.
Yeah.
Duck.
Yeah.
Those are cooked for a long time. And then when we're ready to heat it to serve it, we throw the shrimp.
You
throw some
cook
oysters,
them all together?
Everything. Well, the first ingredients cook all together.
Yeah.
And then we make the dark roux.
Yeah.
And that roux is 50% flour and 50% duck fat. And we use duck fat because duck fat has a very high stabilization point. A fully saturated fat doesn't turn into a trans fat at high heat, where like a vegetable oil will change and actually become bad for you.
Right.
And the duck fat is stable. So we use the duck fat. We make that roux, and we cook that roux slowly when it goes from like a regular white flour color to a blonde color. That'd be called a blonde roux. Good for etouffee. Then it gets to like a peanut butter color, which is nice for like a shrimp creole. And then it gets to a mahogany color, and then it gets to a chocolate color. So this is somewhere between mahogany and chocolate. And you add that in at the end. You cook the okra in. I've seen gumbo recipes with no roux at all, just lots of okra.
Yeah.
Northerners can't handle that so much, you know?
I love this. I could drink the roux, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, this is one of the most delicious, rich, savory things.
And of course, we use my legendary Cajun seasoning in there that we blacken our string beans with. I make my own Cajun seasoning, which is great.
You know what? You've sold a few of those.
Yeah.
Maybe a million.
Yeah, maybe a million. And you can make your own Cajun seasoning. Just want you to know, if you go to rickorlando.com, and there's no K in Rick, all the recipes from today's show are posted. I posted them just today. Just click on recipes. They're right there.
But making a roux, I bet you the first time around, most people are going to screw that up.
I have a kind of fail-safe recipe. You use the oven.
Really?
Start it in a cast iron skillet, 15 or 20 minutes. Turn your oven up to 450, 500. Pop it in the oven. Set your timer for 20 minutes. Open the oven at 20 minutes. Carefully re-whisk it. 20 minutes. Every 20 minutes. You open the oven every 20 minutes, and you'll see after two or three times, it's getting to peanut butter color. Then it's going to start to get to like a chocolate milk color, and then it's going to get to more of a mahogany color. But the oven does the trick.
Okay. And you're not going to burn the house down?
No, you can burn a house down. If you spill it on yourself, you're going to burn yourself down.
Okay, well, let's take a break here. Rick Orlando is our guest. The food is really good. It's Mardi Gras on Food Friday. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Food Friday, 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff here with you, and Rick Orlando is the guest. It's Mardi Gras today. Let's go back to the phones. And Martha in Boyceville. Martha, you're on.
Hey, kids.
Hello, Martha.
Hello, Rick. Hello, love. You know, I heard, first of all, stop saying duck fat or I'm going to have to drive off the road. You know how I feel about duck fat.
How do you feel about it? You like it.
I think we should bathe in it. Like, would that be so bad?
I got to say that the base of this gumbo, the roux that he made with that, I literally could drink it. It's so good.
Do you know that Marie Antoinette used to take goose fat and immerse flowers in it, and she used that for the emollient for her skin?
I'm sure she did.
Martha. I mean, there's nothing better than... Anyway, so I was thinking, because this is the time of year when I love to make tons of quick pickles.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, there's nothing really fresh yet for me that I love. But what do you think goes with Mardi Gras? Like, what would you be making now? What are you making now?
Well, I mean, obviously pickled okra is a biggie down there. Pickled okra is delicious. But what you get in almost every Bloody Mary down there is pickled string beans.
What?
Pickled green beans. They're incredible.
Oh, yeah. Pickled
I've got some
beans
at the house. Stop by later, Martha. I'll give you some. The pickled string beans are, they're so good because you put them in the mason jar raw, and you bring a pickling brine up to a rolling boil, but you put a little extra heat, a few hot peppers in there. Maybe I'll put a little dash of Louisiana hot sauce. In the jar with the pickles, I'll put a few thin slices of onions and a few sprigs of thyme, and then you pour that hot brine over them so they get cooked just enough. They lose their color, but they're still crispy.
Wow.
We serve them at the Bistro, New World Bistro Bar in our Bloody Marys.
Pickled string beans.
Oh, they're the best.
Now, I've had them in martinis, but never in a Bloody Mary.
Oh, yeah. Well, people call them dilly beans, you know, but you can make a nice pickled string beans.
Good. I'm going to make them today.
And then, and it's also kimchi season.
Is it ever kimchi season?
It's kimchi season.
I had Rick's kimchi last month. It was unbelievable.
We stock up the kimchi.
Well, Martha, thanks for the call.
Love you, Martha. Thank you.
See ya. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rick Orlando is our guest. Well, you mentioned drinks. What's a good drink beside the obvious for Mardi Gras?
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you something. I think I've only had one hurricane in my life.
Yeah. Oh, I have a bad experience with those.
You want to embellish?
You tell me first.
Well, I mean, I'm not a big fan of juicy drinks at all.
Yeah.
The quintessential Sazerac is one of the great drinks of New Orleans.
And
we're running them at the Bistro this weekend, which is whiskey. You take a little absinthe and you swirl it around in your glass, then pour the absinthe out, and it's just basically whiskey, lemon, and a little sugar with
the absinthe. Well, that's a great
drink, yeah.
What whiskey would you use?
Well, you want to use a rye.
Okay.
By Sazerac rye. I mean, you might as well.
Okay.
Although, you know, Bullet's pretty good, and there's a couple of great local ryes, but you want a nice rye with that little bit of sweet rye flavor.
Yeah.
I know Arnaud specializes in the French 75, which is really popular, which you've had on the show many times.
Yep.
One of the things that you'll find is a great bar at the Monteleone Hotel. It's called the Carousel Bar.
Yeah.
So if you go there, you'll never leave. This is where Truman Capote hung out. The bar slowly turns on a carousel.
So you can't leave, basically.
It slowly moves.
Nice.
It goes round and round. But they specialize in something like a Ramos Gin Fizz and then milk punches. Milk punches go back to like pre-Depression.
Right.
Where you really weren't getting enough calories from your food.
Right.
So you took some gin, a little milk, a little club soda, a little flavoring, whatever, a little violette or a little simple syrup, and you made milk punches. But, you know, after you've had 17 or 18 drinks on a carousel, a milk punch is a good startup.
So what's in a hurricane? I'll tell you my hurricane story.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of variations, but if you could, with juices, but if you can imagine Hawaiian punch.
Yeah.
With like rum or vodka, it's kind of what it is.
My brother and I years ago had to go down and visit our grandmother. Wasn't doing too good. She was living in Jacksonville, so we went down. She was actually all right. Jacksonville has this big, and it's been years since I've been there, but this big pier, this huge area with restaurants and outside. Mm-hmm. So it was hot, 90 degrees, and I said, "Oh, give me a hurricane." Well, it's huge,
ones, yeah.
And I pounded it down, and didn't get drunk, but it was so there was so much frothy ice that it hit my stomach. And you ever get that where you have too much very cold stuff and your stomach just gets really like a sharp pain? Mm. And I was doubled over with
cramps. I get it in my head usually.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, it was a horrible experience.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's New Orleans has a reputation that is not deserved. It's a fabulous town. It's great people. It's friendly. Yes, you can drink everywhere, but you know, you're going to get hurricanes on Bourbon Street on a Friday night. You're going to get, you know, the same thing you get at a margarita bar in Texas. You're going to get some kind of mix. It's not great.
Yeah.
But the best mixologists in the country are in New Orleans. They have the Tale of the Cocktail Festival every summer. Amazing mixology. Amazing. And amazing history. Great stories, too. And the great thing about the bartenders in New Orleans, they don't work with their heads down.
What do you mean? They're you know, interacting with the customers?
Yeah, a lot of the modern mixologists are so about what they're doing that they forget that their job is to be your guide, your entertainer.
Mm.
There's a great podcast called Gravy where they talk about the great stories that bartenders tell. And one of them is, you know, if your bartender is not telling you a story, he's not engaging you, he's not doing his job. And I believe that too.
Let's go back to the phones here. Rick Orlando is our guest. Mardi Gras is the topic on a Food Friday. Wayne and Phoenicia. Wayne, you're on.
Hey, hi, Rick.
Hi, Wayne.
Enjoyed your restaurant, Saugerties, many times.
Thanks.
Pretty quick question. Several years ago, I was kind of iterating on gumbo and trying to get deeper and perfect it. And, you know, that dark roux, the liquid napalm.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have tried your suggestion of, finish it in the oven. That sounds possible, but at one point I did come across something where they made a dry roux.
Yes.
Where you just, have you, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've actually experimented with dry roux. So dry roux is when you take your flour and you put it in the oven and you bake it to that brownish color.
Yeah.
And then you add your fat to it. I've had mixed results with it.
Yeah, you keep stirring it around periodically.
Exactly, because ovens don't heat evenly. I've had mixed luck with it. If you have a convection oven, it's not a good idea because it blows all over the place.
Ah. So,
but yeah, that can work at home. I mean, you can literally, if you're at home, you can take a pie tin, put a cup of flour, spread it out, and put it in your toaster oven and get it to like a nice nutty color. But I do think that when the flour is cooking with the fat for an extended time, it gives off a different depth of flavor than when you just, because the oil's not really absorbing the proteins the same way. But it certainly works, yeah.
I think that's kind of what I came to after the fact. But the convenient thing was I could put a bag of it in the freezer and kind of fairly quickly pull together a roux.
Yeah. When we make our roux, I save a lot of it because it's a big project. But when we make it, once you have it, it's there.
Wayne, thanks for the call. I can't understand any possible way you could improve on the roux that is the basis of that gumbo.
Well, thank you, Ray. I think improve on it means make it easier.
Well, maybe.
It's not necessarily improve, but it certainly is.
How long will it take you to make that gumbo from start to finish?
Probably 2.5 hours. I mean, you have to cut a lot of vegetables, right? You got to cut all these mirepoix, so that's a while. But once it's in the pot and going and you're making your roux, it's simultaneous cooking. It's kind of like making Sunday sauce. It's a lot like making that red sauce on Sunday.
Well, it's
the longer it goes, the better it gets.
Let's go to David in Hudson. David, you're on.
Hi. As a native New Orleanian and a grandson of my grandparents were from Brobridge, Louisiana.
Oh, wow.
Which is
Welcome to the show, bruh.
I have to say, I make my roux dry.
You do too.
But I do it on top of the stove, and you got to be fast. You've got to be pay attention. It's not one of those things you can turn your back on because it'll burn like that.
Right. You can't be listening to Vox Pop.
No, you can't be doing anything. You can't have a conversation. You can't have that Cajun martini. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to pay attention. Then I put butter and olive oil in it and let it cook for a little longer. But I can do it in maybe 8 minutes.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I could see that. Something about that duck fat and flour in the oven, though, boy. The whole kitchen smells so damn good.
Yeah, you got to have duck fat available all the time.
Yes.
But one thing, have you ever had green gumbo?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it's on our weekend Mardi Gras menu at New World Bistro Bar, and we actually make our green gumbo meatless. That's our vegetarian option.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Gumbo's the herbs.
It's a Lent gumbo.
Yes. So what are you putting yours? What greens?
I whatever I can find. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, having all these lineage of in Louisiana, I never heard of it until about 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It was not part of our family's gumbo making.
It's because you're all carnivores. Yeah, gumbo's the herbs.
Made a gumbo, right? Yeah, and, you know, I think I put arugula and cabbage and collard greens and turnip greens. And the biggest problem with it is kind of an ugly color.
Yeah, it's not really quite green anymore, but
no,
it's delicious. You know, we make ours. We actually make ours a vegetarian full complete protein by adding some cooked black-eyed peas to it just to fortify it.
Oh,
that's my own little trick, but it's delicious.
Okay. Hey, David, there's nothing wrong with the black-eyed pea.
Mm-hmm.
David, before you go, you kind of piqued my interest with the Cajun martini. What is that?
Well, a lot of people put a hot pickled okra in a Cajun martini.
Yeah, okay. Which is great. I love pickled okra, man.
Great idea. Well, David, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. And now we go to, no, that's dead air. We go to Tom in Palmer, Mass.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
So a quick question. Thank you for taking my call. I was just curious about classes. I've seen, Rick, you do certain classes in Albany on occasion at the Albany Cooking School.
Yeah.
And
once a month, pretty much. Usually I do once a month there. It's all on their website. And
right.
Then,
do you do any others?
Yeah, a little few around. Can I say where?
Well, I don't care.
All right. I was making sure I'm not getting any FCC.
Oh, you're fine. Pardon. You can say it.
Oh, well, thanks, Tom.
Thanks.
I appreciate it very much.
You're with the FCC, right? No, we're doing some at Blue Cashew in Kingston right now. I got one Tuesday. I got one Fat Tuesday class.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So you can find all these things at your website, right?
Yeah. Oh,
RickOrlando.com?
Sure.
All right, Tom. Thanks a lot for the call. Do you ever get impatient with the students? I mean, some people can't cook. You ever see that show, The Worst Cooks in America?
Well, here's the deal, Ray. I learned something a long time ago.
What?
There are two types of cooking classes. They're hands-on, there's hands-off.
Right.
Mine are usually hands-off.
So just you watch. Watch and learn.
I do some hands-on classes. Like, we'll do workshops. We're going to make cavatelli. We're going to make ravioli. And those are fun. And tell you what, you get cavatelli ranging from the size of a cockroach to the size of a Pall Mall 100. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're all over the place.
Well done with the Pall Mall reference. Yeah. Good for you.
But my cooking classes are kind of like performance art.
You know,
we cook 4 or 5 dishes in 2 hours, and you eat them, and we talk. And I have you come up and help, and, you know, help here, help roll some spring rolls. But
so it's what we call infotainment.
Absolutely infotainment. A woman named Rosemary Chalmers from KSCO in Monterey Bay said my cooking classes were a cross between Julia Childs and Robin Williams.
Oh, that's good stuff.
A lot of chatting going on.
That's high praise. Let's go to Chuck and Latham. Chuck, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Chuck.
I wanted to ask Rick about some tips on making maybe a more traditional cocovine.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the recipes and everything I find is using kind of what's usually available now, which like a younger spring chicken.
Mm.
But I have a friend who raises chickens that actually gave me their older rooster that they slaughtered when it was outlived its usefulness. So I'm looking for something that's more traditional to actually do with an old rooster.
Cocovin, man, that's it. Red wine, mirepoix, some fresh bay leaves, some, you know, fiend's herbs, slow and low, 4 or 5 hours. I mean, they have, you can buy from some of the farmer's markets, they'll have what they call braising chickens, which are the same thing. They're running chickens. Those chickens are so tough that you can't roast them.
You have to cook them
very
slowly.
You have to cook
slowly.
Them for 4 or 5 hours.
That's but that's I have
the
one. I have
but,
one. I
yeah,
have
that's
one.
It. But the flavor of that chicken is going to be so deep. and so great. There's not even a ton of meat on it, but the flavor is so good. So you could throw some mushrooms in there. You can vary it. But basically, the braising in wine. Now, we don't put wine in food because we want to get drunk. We put wine in food because it adds acidity, and it also helps to break down proteins. That's what wine does. That's why wine's in cooking. So a coq au vin, you saute your vegetables, saute your chicken. Put, again, nice fresh bay leaf, maybe a sprig of thyme, a sprig of tarragon, or you can tie them up, put them in a bag, and let that go, man. But red wine, let it cook down by half, add a little water. You don't have to add stock because you're making stock. Add a little water, and then put it on, like, the lowest setting with a lid and come back.
Like a Dutch oven kind of thing?
Yes. Like, you don't want to do it in an Instant Pot because you don't want to go fast. You
right. No, no,
slow,
no.
Slow,
yeah,
slow.
Yeah, because I've made it before, but only with, you know, like a chicken I can get from the supermarket. And right. So, I'm assuming this would be more like an all-day kind of cook than, a few hours.
It's a Sunday thing. Put it on at noon. Do your thing. I have it for 6 o'clock. Yes.
Thanks, Chuck, for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Steve in Middletown, you're on with Rick Orlando.
Hey, guys. It's funny, Rick. I know this is a Mardi Gras show, but I was thinking about your corned beef recipe. I was looking that up today. Didn't know you were on the show, and then all of a sudden you popped up. So that was funny.
My corned beef and recipe then, in a bit of a brogue, right? That one?
With all the sassy comments and such throughout. Yeah, yes. That one.
I wrote it like a folk
tale.
Then
also listen... Yeah, and listening to the beginning of your show, I like that going back to the Italian roots because that's what I'm doing right now with going back to my grandmother's recipes. She just passed a few weeks ago, and it's just like just going back to some stuff that she taught me.
Oh, great.
That I didn't even know she taught me when I'm doing stuff.
Well, that's it. They don't teach the boys to cook. They teach the boys by osmosis, right? And you kind of learn from being there.
Yeah, it just somehow.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And let me ask you a question because I always asked her what the name of the dish was. And she always gave me the name, but I couldn't understand it. It's one of those traditional ones with, either collard greens or something, cannellini beans, you put the stale bread in it, like one of those just like stews kind of, you know what I mean? She always called it like cavadish or something like that, but
cavadish.
I never got the actual pronunciation. Is that what it is?
Kind of like that. My grandmother would make it. She used to call it minest. Is that similar? It'd be like a ham bone.
Yeah,
I thought
minest
was a prescription drug. I've seen ads for that.
Ask your doctor about minest.
Right. It's good for psoriasis, I've heard, yes.
No, it would be greens. Often escarole is the predominant green. You'd find cabbage, collards can work, a ham bone, a stick of pepperoni, and you cook it till the point where the greens are almost melting. And then my grandmother would take something called grissini, which were the little ends or twists of Italian bread that were hard like rocks and black pepper. And you'd put them in at the end and break them up in there to thicken it and fill you up. Something similar, I think.
Believe it or not, Rick Orlando, we're done.
We're done.
We're done, man. Yes. So the podcast is 1 Million String Beans. The other podcast is called
Clam Bellies on a Beach. Just go to rickorlando.com. Everything's there you need to know about me.
Splendid job, sir. Great, great. Thanks, having Ray. You on the show. We'll see you soon, I'm sure. And do you make a braggio?
Yeah.
We got to talk Italian food
sometime. Let's do old school Italian.
All right. I'm
old
with you.
School.
All right, man.
Yeah.
Support comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts, handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers, and blends, specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends. RollingRockSalt.com. And the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Well, that's it. Thanks for being here today and for listening. Thanks to Rick Orlando for being here today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks again for being with us all week long. Vox Pop will return on Monday when Uncle Alan returns to the big chair for his Medical Monday program. Right now, stand by for news.